A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The light's probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 485. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about Shalkin the Painter. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, this is a 70-minute film from the BBC, first broadcast in December of 1979. It's an adaptation of a Sheridan Le Fanu ghost story, and it was produced for the BBC's arts programme, Omnibus. And so it's a interesting mixture for us here, Brian. We've got art history, some beautiful imagery on screen, and then a chilling ghost tale about, shall we say, art and avarice to sort of get us started?
Yes, that sounds about right. And we will be going into the world of art history more than we have in the past. So that'll be nice.
Very much so.
So the setting for this very much is the world of art, of painting in 17th century Amsterdam in the Netherlands. Gottfried Shalkin is an apprentice training with a master painter called Gerrit Du. And he is also in courtship early on, courting his master Du's niece called Rose.
But of course, things are not going to go straightforward for Shalkin the painter, because a sinister and extremely wealthy stranger is going to appear and demand Rose's hand in marriage. And when he does so, both Dow and Shalkin must make choices that basically are going to define the rest of their lives. There is a sort of decision to be made very early on in this show, and the outcomes of that will have all sorts of effects and ripples.
Getting into the characters, Gottfried Shalkin, the painter of the title, is played by Jeremy Clyde, who played the vampire's intended victim in the Dorabella episode of Supernatural, and he's also done a couple of Big Finish Doctor Who stories. He is a young and ambitious painter who is keen to learn everything he can from his mentor and to make some money in the process selling paintings. And he also has this keen interest in female beauty, both on and off the canvas.
Yes, he does. Will be part of his, let's say, outcome for him in this show. He, of course, is working with Gerrit Dou, played by the great screen presence Maurice Denham. Gerrit Dou, a Dutch master who did indeed study under Rembrandt. Unfortunately for Dow, his eyesight is not good. It's failing him. And he fears for his financial future if he cannot paint any longer, or particularly if he cannot teach, because we see him with several students teaching the great arts of painting. So he's a chap who's also got his own doubts about his future.
Yes, that's right. Rose, played by Cheryl Kennedy, is Dow's niece who is sold into marriage, effectively, to be married to this mysterious man from Rotterdam.
Indeed. And of course, this mysterious man is Vanderhuizen, played by John Justin, the wealthy stranger from Rotterdam in question. A very sinister figure, tall, imposing, a scary face, a gravelly voice, and a character who is extremely still. We rarely see him make any movement at all. In fact, he just seems to appear in scenes. And on the subject of his stillness and quietness, we should perhaps also say that there's not a great deal of dialogue in this production, Brian. Instead, we get told a lot of what is happening, and there is a device to do that.
There is indeed. We have a narrator who is Sheridan Le Fanu himself, voiced by Charles Gray, who we remember as Blofeld from Diamonds Are Forever, and he was also the narrator for the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and we actually saw him in the 1958 series of The Invisible Man.
And what a great voice Charles Gray had. So wonderful to hear his tones on screen. And I've made a little note, Brian, in terms of credited on-screen canonical Blofelds, we think this takes the count to two, I believe.
Donald Pleasence being the other who we talked about in 1984.
Indeed, yes. We were talking off air that we're unlikely to get to Telly Savalas in any of the shows that are in within our remit.
That does seem unlikely, yes.
So what's happening in the plot of Shalkin the Painter? Gerrit Dou is initially unwilling to marry off his niece against her will. He believes that she does have some agency and choice, but he is enticed by, of course, gold. Vanderhausen has a case of gold coins, which is too much for Gerrit Dou, I'm afraid.
Yes, there is sort of a theme of everyone having their price in this. And Rose asks young Shalkin to run away with her and marry her, but he decides to stay with Dou to earn enough money to buy her back. And Rose resigns herself to go away with Vanderhausen, not having a lot of choice. She goes along with it. However, when Dou doesn't hear anything from her for months, he sends Shalkin to Rotterdam to check on her to see what's happened.
And of course, if you're following along with the theme of a ghost story, you won't find it too much of a surprise to find that nobody in Rotterdam appears to have heard of this mysterious Vanderhausen and his new bride. And Shalkin sort of casts around, unable to find them, and is left with no choice but to just continue his studies, to continue his art, to go on and become the well-known, respected, and sought-after painter that he wanted to be. And things seem to progress along in that fashion for a while until on one dark and terrifying night, Rose reappears in the house of Dou and Shalkin, but she is absolutely terrified, begging them for help. Quite a distressing scene in a way, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. So getting into our production notes and getting into a bit of art history for a change as well. Both Gottfried Shalkin and Gerrit Dou were real painters. They were considered among the masters of Dutch painters. Shalkin lived from 1643 to 1706, and Dou from 1613 to 1675. And Dou was also one of Rembrandt's students. That is accurate. Shalkin is well known for paintings of figures lit by candlelight and surrounded by darkness. And we see that being reflected in this show quite a bit. His art hangs in some major art galleries around the world and also in Buckingham Palace, as it turns out.
Yes. So if we turn from Dutch masters to a master of Gothic and horror fiction, we now have the Irish writer Sheridan Le Fanu, who lived from 1814 to 1873, noted for, in particular, Uncle Silas in 1864 and his extremely influential vampire story, Carmilla, published in 1872. He was a law student studying law in Dublin, and while a student, he published 12 Gothic short stories in the Dublin University magazine between 1838 and 1840. These 12 stories were purported within the fiction to have come from the papers of a fictional 18th century Catholic priest called Father Purcell. And so the 12 stories are known as the Purcell Papers. And it's the seventh story published in May 1839 called Strange Event in the Life of Schalken the Painter. Lefanu was inspired by Schalken's atmospheric paintings. I'm not sure which ones would have been in Dublin galleries at that time. I did try and have a look. There are a couple that are currently in the Art Gallery of Ireland, so it may be those. And the story, as I say, strange event in the life of Schalken the painter. I don't know what it was about 19th century horror writers who didn't like the definite article at the start of a short story, Brian.
That does happen from time to time, doesn't it?
It does, yes.
This story was actually one of M.R. James' favorite ghost stories when he wrote a review of earlier ghost stories that predated the ones that he wrote himself. It was one of his favorites, so possibly could have been an influence on the great ghost story writer M.R. James. Now, when we move forward to the late 1970s and the BBC, we had the writer and director Leslie Megahy there. And he was working on a BBC art show called Omnibus and was producing short documentary films about famous artists.
He was indeed. And he was close friends and collaborator with a film editor called Paul Humphreys. And the pair of them were talking about trying to do something different with the art documentary for television. And they came up with this idea of a history lecture that sort of turned into a horror film. But they didn't really have, at first, the subject for this idea. But Humphreys had moved to Amsterdam, and he was obviously seeing a lot of artwork. But he also, while he was there, read Lefanu's ghost story and thought it would make a great subject for their shared project. So this led them to them studying a great deal more about Dutch art, and in particular, the paintings of Schalken. So quite a little bit of a journey the pair of them went on to get started with this film that they're going to make.
That's right. And Megahy goes on to write the script himself. And he took some advice from a friend who was a drama director who told him there was not enough dialogue and he should rewrite it to have more dialogue. But Megahy went back to it and decided that he didn't need more dialogue and he would keep it as is. And he pitched it to the Omnibus editor, who actually considered getting Lawrence Gordon Clark from the Ghost Story for Christmas series to come in and direct it. But Megahy, who was both writer and director, wanted to do it himself.
Yes, it's a bit of a passion project for him and Humphreys. And I think they wanted to, you know, keep control of this themselves, but they didn't get the opportunity. They had to sort of keep it on the back burner until, of course, Megahy is offered the editorship of Omnibus itself in 1979, and he accepted the role on the basis that he could do Schalken the painter. So he's finally going to get to make this project that I think him and Humphreys have been working on for a couple of years.
Yeah, interesting.
Now, some early casting ideas. The narrator, he wrote it with the idea that Vincent Price might be the narrator and play Lefanu. They then thought that Vincent Price possibly at that stage might be a little bit too big and a bit too theatrical and larger than life for the role. So interestingly enough, they offered it to Peter Cushing, another great voice. Cushing passed on the part because he found the sort of the content of the story a bit offensive to him. So it just so happened that they heard that Charles Grey was free, and of course, another one of the great voices of film and television. So he stepped in to do the narration as Sheridan Lefanu.
They wanted to get Arthur Lowe to play Dow, but he was unavailable.
Interesting choice. Well known to us from Dad's Army.
Right, of course.
But a great actor, you know, as well in other projects.
Yeah, interesting possibility there. So for the filming, the cinematographer John Hooper and the designer Anna Ridley went to great lengths to produce sets and to do lighting that would match the Dutch masters, that would fit with the artwork itself. They included the checkered floors that were fashionable at the time and lighting from candles and through stained glass windows, and of course the costuming. This was all done to fit not just the era, but very much to fit the style of the paintings that we can now look at. And there were, in fact, a number of scenes and set pieces that were taken directly from famous paintings. And there is a cameo from Rembrandt who stares out at us like one of his famous self-portraits. So we have these kinds of things in there too. They were really working with this idea of bringing the paintings of the Dutch masters to screen, where we could see the paintings on screen, but also see these live action things that were based very closely on the paintings.
And we will come back to this in our next episode to talk a bit more about the marvelous recreation of art that we see on screen in this production. It's really quite interesting to get to next time as well, Brian.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, in the story, there is a Schalken painting referred to, which is the sort of basis of the story itself. This is a fictional painting that, as far as we know, never existed. But of course, they had to create one for the TV show. And so that was done by artist Paul Martin, who also acted as an art consultant during filming. And I believe I'm right in saying that when you get close-ups of Schalken actually painting or drawing, I think it's Paul Martin's hands that we're seeing doing the actual work. And he would be on set and say, oh no, they didn't do it like that, they did it like this, and so on at various points.
Yeah, so that's part of how they really brought things so close to the painted material. Schalken the Painter was broadcast late night on BBC One as an omnibus special on Sunday, December 23rd, 1979.
So as you will see from that date, this could have qualified for one of our Christmas ghost story episodes. And in fact, for a while, the BBC even considered badging this film as another installment of a ghost story for Christmas. The long-running series had sort of wrapped up the previous year with an episode called The Ice House, which, of course, we have covered in the past. I think Megahy and Humphreys wanted to keep this as something separate, something for Omnibus, as their intended art history lecture. So it stayed under the Omnibus umbrella, as it was.
I think that made more sense. I think this fits better with the art history grouping of things than with Ghost Story for Christmas. It is a ghost story for sure, but it doesn't quite feel like a match for that series.
Right. Well, it is interesting, of course, because in a way, A Ghost Story for Christmas was sort of kickstarted, or at least inspired, by Jonathan Miller's Whistle and I'll Come for You in 1968, which was, of course, broadcast on Omnibus. So Omnibus sort of brackets the BBC's A Ghost Story for Christmas from the 1970s. And I'll just mention Jonathan Miller was one of the mentors and inspirations of Leslie Megahy. So all sorts of connections there. But as you say, interesting and probably more sensible choice to stick with the Omnibus badging.
Yeah, very interesting.
So if we've tickled your fancy, how do you go about watching Schalken the Painter? In Region 2, the BFI released a dual format Blu-ray and DVD set in 2013. So you get the two discs in the two formats. You get a making of feature which interviews Leslie Megahy and director of photography John Hooper. As is characteristic with the BFI, you get an extensive notes booklet written by Ben Harvey. I would suggest, as always, watch the show before you read the booklet, because there are spoilers within. And there are two other short films on that DVD and Blu-ray set, two classics or based on classics of horror fiction. The films are The Pit from 1962 and The Pledge from 1981. Now, all of that wonderful BFI bundle is currently £15. For some reason, the DVD-only version is currently more expensive than that. If £15 seems like a lot, well, you can stream this episode on Amazon currently for £2 only, if you just want the film. £2 on Amazon. It's strangely not on the BFI player, Brian, over here, which you'd have thought perhaps it would be.
Yeah, you would have thought that might be with that, but I guess not. Interesting.
However, you can rent the DVD version from Cinema Paradiso as well. So, over here in Region 2, once again, we're spoilt for choice with Blu-ray, DVD, streaming, and rental options. Brian, what about Region 1?
In Region 1, there is no release. Amazon Marketplace does have the BFI imports on DVD for about $19 US or $30 Canadian, and on Blu-ray for about $24 US and $31 Canadian. And those are for those BFI releases, and those are Region 2 and Region B, so you do need to be able to play those if you import them.
Okay. Now, Sheridan Nefanu's stories are now in the public domain and fairly easy to find, particularly in digital format. I have downloaded a collection of his stories and read Strange Event in the Life of Shulkin the Painter. It's not my favourite ghost story. It does contain some rather unfortunate racial stereotyping, which I suppose was more common in 1839 when it was written, but is still rather difficult to read. I have read some of his other stories, which I prefer to this one, but we'll perhaps come back to that next time, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. So that wraps up the first half of our discussion. Next time, we will talk more about what is going on in this story and get into some more spoilers.
We are going to take a stab at analysing some of the themes in Lefanu's story and Mega Hay's film of the same. And of course, we will have to review this BFI release and make our decisions as to whether we're going to recommend it to you. So lots to talk about when we come back again next time, Brian.
Absolutely. Until then, you can find all of our episodes at BritishInvaders.com. And if you search for our group on Facebook, you can find us there and join in some of the conversations. And you can also follow us on Instagram and on Threads. We are British_Invaders_podcast on both of those platforms.
We are on some social media, as you say. Come and find us there and let us know what you think. Come and find us at the Voice of Geeks Network, which you will find at vognetwork.com. Check out podcasts, gaming, streaming, and much more content at The Voice of Geeks on vognetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, Eamon in England also signing off.